Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. My name is Chris Jackson.
And this is Enrico Belmonte.
And today, I think we're going to talk about the different reliability metrics that different industries use. Good, bad, and ugly.
Yeah, it would be a great topic, Chris. This is the first time that we record a podcast together, podcast
episode. I know, I'm excited. And,
I'm pretty excited, yeah. So do you want to start? We have a broad experience in different sectors.
Right. So I don't know if we should start with the typical metrics or the sort of sectors that might find this discussion interesting. I know that there's the military or defense sector. And to be fair, within military and defense, there's a few different metrics. There's the medical industry. Again, they have their own different metrics. I think consumer products, again, are quite different. And then things like electronic components, they have their own metrics. They have their own units of reliability as well. So I don't know. Do we want to pick a sector or do we want to pick a metric?
I would pick a sector. I would pick a sector. I would add also a couple of sectors where I have experience. So automotive is one of them, and home appliances is the second. And yeah, let's see if any other sector comes up later. So let's start. I would say I can start with home appliance sector. Right? So if we think how reliability is structured in a home appliances industry, the quality department is well structured and established in those companies. And the quality department basically is looking after warranty costs and consumer star rating, and also SCR, what is the acronym for service call rate.
Right.
Yeah. So these are typical metrics that you probably know. And they are focused in the short time after production, basically 1, 2, and also there are warranty costs a little bit more tricky, because there are countries, at least in Europe, where warranty costs where warranty goes up to 5 years. So it depends a little bit, but they are metrics that are related to the short time after the start of production, and they are mostly focus on epidemic issues that basically in the bad up curve, they are those with the descending failure rate. Yeah.
Did you say epidemic?
Epidemic, yeah.
Okay. Or so epidemic as in a disease?
Yeah, epidemic means, that's great. I think this is a typical wording in home appliance industry. It means that if you have some problems related to, say, decreasing failure rate, for example, assembly or soldering, you will see it in a lot of appliances, a lot of products at the beginning, and then it will decrease over time.
Just to make sure I understand, do you mean the word endemic?
No, epidemic.
Epidemic, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so obviously when you have products with similar manufacturing or assembly processes, if you have one issue with that process step, it's likely to affect at least the batch, perhaps the whole product line. So I think for most commercial industries, warranty reliability is one of the baseline reliability metrics you just need to have in terms of measuring performance. That gets linked back to commercial or profit margin. The amount of money you spend on warranty repairs obviously takes away from your profit margin. There's actually a good deal of information out there by industry at a website called warrantyweek.com, where it does indicate typical warranty reliability, or they sometimes use the term failure rates in a different context. rate, mm-hmm. percentage of things that fail during the warranty period. Those reliability engineers out there, those true to form ones, will know that, the definition of failure rate is actually something a little bit different. But notwithstanding, anything where you have a warranty period, the warranty reliability is one key metric. And that stems across most industries.
Yeah, especially in consumer goods, but also, for example, products like power tools, but whatever product, as you said, that has a warranty period, warranty costs are monitored by the company, and mm-hmm. of course, as you said, they impact directly the margin the company have. Therefore, they are really, really important. Yeah. But do you agree with me? They are, let's say, a short term, say, metric, like so 1 to up to 5 years. So it's not taking into account all the wear out mechanism occurring, wear out time dependent mechanism that occurs afterwards. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's a key distinction, too, because if you have, say, for example, your business case is predicated on there being no more than 5% of your products failing during the warranty period. Mm. And it turns out that 4.9% fail during that warranty period. Well, one of the first things people might do is conclude, okay, we potentially, our warranty period is too long because we're almost hitting our allowable percentage of things that fail. Whereas perhaps all those 4.9% of warranty failures are actually that wear in infant mortality decreasing failure rates. And you might actually be seeing, let's pick a warranty period of 5 years. Perhaps that 4.9% is being accumulated in the first 2 years. So although you have a metric which by itself suggests you cannot extend a warranty period because it's already at the limit, if you can work out that it's all due to those infant mortality problems, then you might be able to extend that warranty period without seeing an appreciable increase in warranty repairs because you're yet to hit that wear out region. And so, I take your point that it's always important to truly understand the failures that stem from different failure rate characteristics. It's borderline impossible to characterize reliability to the extent to you can inform a decision based on a single number. Mm. And it might sound counterintuitive, but the reason why we want to always extend warranty periods is because that makes it more appealing to our customers and consumers, especially if we offer a 6-year warranty period and everybody else is offering a 5-year warranty period. So understanding, coming to terms with how your things are failing is just brutally important and go potentially one step beyond sort of business-centric performance metrics.
And I would say another point that in the consumer good companies, right, there are in many cases, there are well-known products. Okay, for example, power tools, they are a lot of generation of the same power tool. They are developed and manufactured. Where company try to increase their margin is to change, for example, supplier. When changing the supplier, it might be that we have some solder problems or assembly problems, or so these are problems, issue related to infant mortality, and therefore this company are absolutely structured in terms of monitoring their reliability over the first years, because they can react very fast if something goes wrong, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's sometimes not just the suppliers themselves. It can be way you install stuff. When I find infant mortality, I'm always just, my first port of call is installation, because if it is installation, then that's a super easy problem to fix. It involves virtually no money. It usually involves a process or step change, which is often free or close to it. So I always look for the cheapest solution first when I'm doing RCA and I've identified infant mortality or something similar.
And exactly who. So what we said before, so far, is that having a good organization monitoring warranty cost is essentially understandable. Yeah. But what if the metrics that are measured by the company go beyond 2 or 3 years, beyond the warranty period? Do you think that from a business case perspective, these companies can afford this kind of approach? So getting data up to 10, 12, 20 years, you know, it is really, it is a big effort to do that. So I want to ask you your opinion about that in terms of cost-benefit ratio.
Well, I mean, yeah, I take your point. I mean, getting data for 10, 20 years is in some cases borderline impossible, if not very expensive. But I think you can still use reliability metrics out to 10, 15, 20 years in terms of analyzed or projected reliability performance during production and design. So we often use the term Maytag life to refer to how long the thing will still be functional for. Conceivably, Maytag famously made washing machines, which at least when they started to be produced were borderline indestructible, hence the concept of Maytag life. And you don't necessarily need to have to monitor performance out to 10, 15, 20 years for that metric to become important. You can conduct, for example, accelerated life testing or just even analysis during design is to be confident that based on anticipated usage profiles, that thing will last 15, 20 years. In fact, many highly reliable components, including those, for example, in nuclear power plants, they get verified as being able to last decades without being afforded the opportunity to test for 10, 20 plus years. So I do take your point. That metric, often we look at metrics in terms of actual performance. And warranty is an interesting one because you usually have good data. The customers are going to tap you on the shoulder and say, this isn't working anymore. It's the warranty period. Okay. So you have a really good data, but you should also always be analyzing or predicting your reliability during production or end design for warranty reliability. And ideally your predictions and projections will marry up with reality. So yeah, the metrics can have two different roles. I think the question you asked is the veracity, the ability, viability of trying to chase down service life data 10, 15 years, 20 years in many situations can be impossible.
And because in terms of failure rate, for example, what we generally neglect is the denominator, the number of appliances that are alive or have started alive, right? Mm-hmm. And this is really, really hard to get, you know. And moreover, is also the number of failures over a long time is pretty hard to get, because if you have in the consumer good sectors, you might want to replace a component by yourself, and you don't want to buy an official component, even if you should do that. So in that case, this data become impossible to get. I think one great opportunity that we have and we will have is coming from the connected appliances.
Yes,
if the connected appliances or connected products in general, they are standing back, the alarms, the alerts, and the error, we can build better trustable data to verify our assumption when we designed reliability.
Yeah. Which actually leads me to another industry that has a terrible approach to reliability metrics, and it's sort of touching on the whole service life thing. Do you remember when LED light bulbs came out and there were advertisers having 15, 20 year times to failure to the extent that you would never have to replace them?
Yeah.
And of course, we know that's nonsense. It's just absolute nonsense. Most people have used LED lights enough to know that they don't last a generation. Yeah. And there's a very important reason, and it's almost an embarrassing indictment on the reliability industry, and that is in the world of electronic components. They have this metric called FITS, failures in time. It's unique to electronic components. It's one FIT is equivalent to one failure per billion hours. And you'll routinely see components advertised with, for example, a failure rate of 100 FITs. You say, okay, that's fantastic. But when you do the math, that implies a mean time to failure in excess of 1,000 years.
Yeah.
And it's just insane to suggest that if Jesus of Nazareth started using one of these components, then you would have only had to swap one of them out over that last 2,000 years or so.
Yeah.
And the reason why these numbers are so ridiculous is because the industry only tests for a very short period of time when electronic components have not even started to wear out. So they might test 1,000 capacitors, observe a very small number of them failing, as you would expect when they're all very young and haven't degraded through dendritic growth or diffusion or things like that. And so they essentially all they're doing is testing how often these things fail when they're young, fit, and virile. They never test these things till they get to their wear out period, so to speak. And that includes diodes. And so these early projections of the lifetimes of these LED light bulbs is based on the producer advertised metrics of FITs. And they did the math and said, oh, these things will last for an incredibly long period of time. And they said, okay, each one has a fit rate of this, fit rate of that, add them all up. Okay, 20 to 40 years. And it's just nonsense. And so there's an example of a commonly used metric in the sector of electronic components, which is just borderline useless for any meaningful decision.
I agree with you. I have also experience with electronic components, especially LEDs, and for example, the degradation of the LED is measured as degradation of lumen maintenance. Yeah? So lumen maintenance is the intensity of luminosity that LED has, that includes multiple damage mechanisms, which are related to the encapsulation predominantly. And even after 3,000 hours, which is a long time to test, right? You got like the lumen maintenance moves from 100 to 98, 97. So you have like 3 percentage point of decrease. And the limit is 50%. So how can you extrapolate it without being a magician? Yeah, so it basically is not impossible. Therefore, there are a lot of standards saying, hey, you can extrapolate up to 3-6 times of what you've tested, but basically it's not enough. So
yeah.
Messing up with the data, assuming, for example, exponential distribution and assuming fitting line for degradation, which are basically based on nothing, it doesn't help then design for reliability. Yeah. So
the exponential distribution famously doesn't model wear out at all. So
it's
problematic.
Yeah, but basically a lot of people use them, even if it's modeling randomic failures. So they are saying, okay, that's pretty easy to be used. And as we repeat a lot of time in this SOR, it's good for calculating the MTBF, right?
Yeah.
So
if you want the MTBF, it's helpful. But if you want to know the reliability, that's difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. But for electronics, I want to still discuss electronics. There are a lot of metrics which are related to the early phase of failures, like burn-in and so on, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's also metrics that are probably before the start of production, no? But they are also included, and burn-in is a process which is killing all the infant mortality.
Defective components.
Yeah, defective components. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think I'm glad you brought that up, because I've seen one, you know, some industries say, well, the first 10% of failures are due to infant mortality. And that statement is not verifiably true. For example, think of a car tire or a vehicle tire. Very rarely do they fail due to infant mortality. They typically fail due to puncture or where the tread has worn away. So if they're only failing due to puncture, which is a constant failure rate, or the tread wearing away, we have an increasing failure rate, by definition, you have zero infant mortality, and that's fine. That's very plausible, especially for very simple parts and components like vehicle tires. So simply saying the first 5 to 10% of tires that fail due to infant mortality is demonstrably wrong. And at the other end of the spectrum, we know that spacecraft, especially small satellites, fail exclusively due to infant mortality. That is 100% of small satellites fail due to infant mortality, as the failure rate keeps decreasing over time for reasons that, you know, I've actually spoken about in other podcasts. But long story short, small satellites are so hard to manufacture. They're not mass produced. It's just that no matter how hard you try, each small satellite is so different in its build state and can be uniquely damaged during launch because launch is a strong term for small satellites. It's sort of vomited out of a spacecraft with a bunch of others. And so they all enter low Earth orbit with a range of damage already inflicted upon them. So virtually all of them fail due to infant mortality. So 100% of them failed due to infant mortality because they still have that decreasing failure rate. So any industry which mandatorily says that the first 5, 10, 15% of products are due to infant mortality is wrong. You have to do the analysis and identify the region during which a failure rate is decreasing, if at all, and percentage of failures that occur in that region are infant mortality failures, you can't standardize that percentage. I do think starting to run a bit low in time for this conversation, but I do think we should move on to the defense sector as well.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah. Yeah.
Because the defense sector has done a lot of good work over the years in terms of establishing the importance of reliability engineering. You could argue that post-World War II, the various militaries across the world actually triggered the creation of this specific domain that we have since developed over time. But I'd also argue that these days, if you want to see how to not do reliability well, look at any military acquisition process. It is awful, ridiculously complex. And as we know, most products which are subjected to extensive reliability testing and reliability assurance, whatever you want to call it, are received by militaries and turn out not to be very reliable at all. A good example is the Joint Light Tactical Vehicle in the U.S. Department of Defense. That vehicle is sort of like the next version of the Humvee armored, technically a light vehicle, but still 6 or 7 tons. Mm-hmm. Oshkosh was one of 16 respondents, and all their vehicles got tested, and Oshkosh's JLTV won the reliability trials, and in fact the vehicle itself demonstrated a reliability that was about 3 times the requirement of 2,400 mean miles between operational mission failure. But once the vehicles got into service, they were very unreliable, to the extent that the U.S. Department of Defense did something which had previously never been done before and said, hey Oshkosh, we're going to get another competitor to start producing the vehicles you designed, because we've lost confidence in your ability to manufacture defect-free the vehicles, because they believe a lot of these defects were manufacturing issues were causing premature failures. And if the published reports identify some really basic failure modes that should not be a thing. And the metric I used then was mean miles between operational mission failure, which is from the family of mean time between failure.
Yeah.
And that's probably one of the dominant so-called reliability metrics that I think the fence continues to perpetuate.
Oh, really? Okay. Didn't know that they still use mean time between failure.
Yeah. And one of the reasons it's problematic is because it's just a number. So let's just say you have 1,000 hours between failure. It doesn't tell you if that's been caused by wear in, wear out, maintenance-induced failures, constant hazard rate failures. It doesn't help you optimize maintenance. You should only conduct maintenance where the replaceable things start to wear out. And it just creates this misnomer of reliability. And we've also been able to prove through military data, somewhat ironically, that the more you maintain, the more you risk adding additional failure modes. So you drive down the mean time between failure.
Yeah, you mentioned that. That's quite interesting. But yeah, I think we need to wrap up a little bit the discussion. There are a lot of sectors that we haven't touched yet, so we can basically do another episode on it. But yeah, the choice of the metric is really can drive the design for reliability. Because if you say, for example, that what you want to do is to get to achieve a certain target for MTBF, you will shape the organization in order to meet this goal, right? Forgetting what is really important. Okay, so basically, what I'm saying is that the definition of the metric should be subordinate to the problem we have, and not the other way around. Yeah.
Yes. And or your business case.
Or your business case, yeah, which is basically related to the problem. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. How you make money, or how you define mission success. I think we maybe covered a small fraction of industries and metrics. But you're right. The key thing is you should not let the metrics choose you based on what industry you think you belong to. You need to choose your metrics based on what it is your organization is supposed to achieve strategically.
Thank you very much for the discussion, Chris.
No worries. And if you've enjoyed this podcast or other podcasts out there, please let us know and please give us feedback about what we could talk about next time. Go to www.ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. You can leave comments. You can leave a voice message asking us to do things better or differently, or just saying, well done. We get a lot of ideas from our listeners. And so if you have a reliability topic, which is really grinding your gears, so to speak, please let us know. And we will definitely have someone talk about it. But hey, Enrico, thanks for your time today, and we'll have to do this again soon.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much, Chris. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.